This is Digital Story Podcast number 842, May 10th, 2022. Today's theme is the bias against teleconverters and conversion lenses. I'm Derek Story. Photographers tend to like their cameras clean and their lenses lean. Anything that might compromise image quality, such as teleconverters, conversion lenses, and sometimes even filters, are frowned upon. But how legitimate are our concerns? I re-examine my biases in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. My concerns about teleconverters and conversion lenses, conversion lenses are those lenses that we put over the front of our existing lens. They could be magnification, they could be wide angle lenses, those kinds of things. My concerns go back a long ways, way back to the film days, in fact. And I can still remember my disappointment that I felt when my prints came back from the lab after using a $20 2X teleconverter on my 70-210 zoom lens, not a professional one. And the pictures were so soft, they were almost fuzzy. Now, as you can tell from that paragraph, there were a lot of things that set me up for disappointment in that paragraph, and we'll be covering some of them. And that letdown happened after suffering through the picture-taking process where I could barely focus my camera because the viewfinder was so dark from the two stops loss of light from the teleconverter. And remember, you're looking onto that ground glass and you have a microprism collar and then probably something, a split focuser in the middle there. And how when you didn't have enough light coming in from the lens, it would just like go kind of black in there. And you're just going, ah. And of course, focusing isn't critical at all in this sort of situation, right? So you're having this agonizing focusing process because you're losing two stops of light on an amateur lens, not a professional, super fast telephoto. And then you get your pictures back and they're soft. Now, there could be all sorts of reasons for that softness. We know that. I mean, one of them is when we hear people talk about how their telephoto lens or the zoom lens isn't sharp at all. And maybe they just have camera shake, right? And that's where you look. Is the whole image soft, or, is there just part of it soft where you misfocused? If the whole thing is soft, then it's either camera shake or you really do have some bad optics there. I also experimented with low-cost conversion lenses, that allowed me to get closer, made things wider, that kind of stuff. And those results were also less than satisfying. So way back then, I just decided that I was going to swear off optical enhancers altogether. If my lens couldn't get the job done natively, then I would either have to go without or buy another lens that met my needs. And like so many other scenarios in photography, the opinion I formed years ago remained with me today, or at least it did, And this is a funny thing about us in general, in that, whatever, anything over ISO 400 is too high. Things like that were true at one time, but then a whole bunch of stuff changes. Decades go by, and we still have the same opinion. So we have to re-examine our biases at times just to make sure that they're still applicable, make sure that we're not, kind of off in the ozone there. And that's what I decided to do with this notion about teleconverters and conversion lenses. Now, my first modern breakthrough actually happened a while back, and that was with a teleconverter, the Olympus MC14 1.4x teleconverter. And I was actually originally loaned this teleconverter when I was on an Olympus shoot. So I had my, 40 to 150 f/2.8 Pro lens, as I absolutely love. And I was loaned both the 1.4 and the 2X Olympus teleconverters and said, you know, they're matched. You know, the optical quality is basically the same as if it were a full-fledged zoom lens and all that stuff. And so hesitantly, but I figured, you know, what the heck here? I have nothing to lose because it's on their dime. I tried them. Both worked very well. I particularly liked the 1.4 because I only lost one stop of light, but gained some really nice magnification on a lens that already gives me the equivalent of 300 millimeters. And so then I gained another 1.4x and only losing one stop. So that put me at f4 through the entire range. And the images look good. Now, the images also looked very good with the 2x. But the 2x is a little bit bigger. You lose more light. And I don't usually need that much reach. I'm not a bird photographer per se or anything like that. So the 1.4 was a real sweet spot for me. And it kind of opened my eyes to, hey, under the right conditions, with the right gear, these things can work. And Olympus is saying, yeah, because our teleconverter is designed to match our optics. You know, this is not a $29, you know, works on everything kind of thing. This is a $349 optical piece of equipment. And you go, oh. All right, so now my latest breakthrough, there have been some in between, but now fast forward to my latest breakthrough, which is just recently, is with the Fujifilm WCL X100-2 wide conversion lens for the X100V that I shoot with. I had been using a DIY rig to go from the equivalent of 35 millimeters, which is nice. I love shooting in that most of the time, but every now and then I needed some more width. So I've been going with a DIY rig, but the problem with the DIY rig, and I wrote about this actually in an article I published on Sunday, the problem with the DIY rig was that that lens, that was an old Canon wide angle lens, and it was like huge. I mean, it was like a barbell on the end of my camera. So it was fine for around the house and in the neighborhood, which was great during the pandemic. And it got me that wide angle with pretty good quality. But it wasn't so great now that I'm out traveling. I'm out and about a lot more. And it was just too bulky to lug around. And it was inconvenient too. I had to go to, you know, manual mode, manual XF mode to change the data. And, you know, it was just like, ugh. So I said, okay, I'm just going to save up and buy Fujifilm's converter, their 28 millimeter converter. And then, you know, this is one of those purchases that when you have it in your hands, you go, why did I wait so long to do this? Because it is everything that my DIY solution was not. It's compact, it's smart, it's sharp, it's all those sort of things. I'll go into more detail about that later. But the fact of the matter is, I'm putting a lens over my lens, and I think that I was just looking at this thing all wrong because I was thinking, okay, this can't work when you just take another, you know, piece of glass and put it over, you know, your existing lens that's all fine-tuned and has all the optical elements and all that kind of stuff. But the way that I really should look at this is that Fujifilm designed the original lens on my X100V, and they designed this optical converter. And I have to think of it as one lens when the two are together, right? Because they know the formula. They know everything that's in the original lens. And then they build another lens. So instead of that lens on my camera being the objective, the outer lens, it becomes one of the internal elements for a wide-angle lens. I just kind of started to shift the way that I looked at things. Now, I could do this because the results were good. That allowed me to think about this accessory in a different way, okay, in a different way. So it's handsome, it's compact, it's smart, it provides excellent image quality, but again, it costs $349. Not $29 or $39, but $349 if you buy a new one. as I started thinking about my opinion changing about these accessory optics, a few of the reasons that sort of came to light as I was mulling this over in my brain, why am I having such a better experience now than I did in the past, which is a horrible experience? I mean, any experience would be better than the experience I had in the past, but this experience has been really good. So what are some of the factors that have changed that from those original days when I formed that original opinion? I got five of them here. The first one is mirrorless cameras and autofocus have ended that focusing problem when I'm using a teleconverter. So even though I'm losing, let's say I got the two-stop version on there, the 2X, when you're looking through an electronic viewfinder and you have great autofocus and the thing's matched and it's electronic, it has electronic contacts, all that kind of stuff, you no longer have a focusing problem. It just feels like when you're looking through the electronic viewfinder, you're looking through your original lens, except you have more magnification. So mirrorless cameras, again, really make a big difference. Improved autofocusing makes a big difference. Digital lenses make a big difference. So all these things have sort of eliminated that focusing problem, which was a big one back before when I was struggling to, you know, just get the darn thing in focus, which is not great if you're shooting wildlife or sports, right? You just don't have time to fool around with it. So yeah, the first one, mirrorless cameras, digital lenses, thank you very much. Solved the first problem. Second, matched optics are so much better than generics. So I was buying generics before, and you know, matched optics started coming out, obviously, before, recently. They've been out for a while. Canon's been doing it. Nikon's been doing it. You know, they've all been doing it. I had a nice Canon, I think it was a 1.4 teleconverter that I used with my, was it 7200 on that one or 210? I always forget. Anyway, that zoom lens, I had both the F2.8 and the F4 model, and it was particularly nice on the F2.8 model. So that matched optic was very good. That was, you know, kind of like in the in-between zone there. And so when the camera manufacturer is making the optic and it's matching and saying it works with this lens, and this lens, and that's it, right? It doesn't work with the other lenses, or you're probably not going to like the results that you get with those other lenses. Use it with these lenses and you're going to be a happy camper. That is different than just buying, you know, Acme 2X teleconverter that just, you know, works in your particular mount but is not matched to anything, okay? So matched optics make a big difference and they're much better than generics. Number three, more expensive does mean better, right? I mean, you look at these optics that I'm using now, you can really see the lens coatings and you can feel the quality of design and, you know, just everything. I mean, they feel like a real lens and really not some sort of cheesy thing that you're putting between your camera and your lens or in front of your lens. They feel like really well-designed, machined with quality internals. And so that costs more. And so spending more actually does make a difference here. And even though it's a begrudging expense, believe me, sometimes some of these things I go, I know it's $349. I can save up for it. I can get it. But then, you know, $340, I mean, there's so many things that, you know, you go through that whole thing, right? But then after I do it, I'm so happy, right? If it's something that I need, I'm so happy after I do it. So more expensive does mean better. Now, the fourth thing is they have features that enhance the user experience. And let me tell you a little bit about this Fujifilm, you know, the WCL X100 II, Mach 2. The Mach 2 is the one that has the coolest features if you shoot with the X100S or X100V. And so it has things like, it's got this little magnet in the body of the lens that matches up with the camera, and it tells the camera when you mount the lens, you screw it in, when you mount the conversion lens, tells the camera that, hey, this lens is on there, and the camera automatically changes. It automatically changes the viewing through the electronic viewfinder and on the LCD. So it changes it appropriately. So it goes from 35 millimeter, 28 millimeter. You don't have to do anything. And it changes the XF data to read properly for, in the case of the Fujifilm, it says 19 millimeter, which means 28 millimeter. You know how that whole thing goes. But all that is just changed automatically. You don't have to think about. So it's almost like using an interchangeable lens camera. You put the lens on and everything is the way it should be with that lens. And then they did another really nice thing, which is the protection filter on my X100V when you use the adapter ring is 49 millimeters. They have very nice filter threads on the wide angle adapter that are, guess what, 49 millimeters as well. First of all, that tells you that it's not a very big optic, which it isn't, far more compact than what I was carrying before. But then also that I can use the same filter. So you take the filter off, the filter ring adapter off, put on, you know, the conversion lens, put on your filter. It looks good on there. It's in balance, all that kind of stuff. And it just feels right. Well, these matched features that enhance the user experience, you know, that makes it a real situation and not just these toys that you're, you know, using to somehow broaden your angle or get closer or whatever. So I loved the matched feature part of this equation. And of course, that's also part of what you pay for $349. And number five is that with both of these, it's more compact using these adapters than it would be using the comparable lens. Really true on a teleconverter, right? A 1.4x teleconverter is far more compact than a 400 millimeter lens or 420 millimeter lens, whatever it works out to be. And this 28 millimeter conversion lens is super compact, smaller than a 28 millimeter lens would be, even if I could have interchangeable lenses on the X100V, which I can't. So, you know, these things are real space savers as well. So then it comes down to image quality, right? How is the image quality? So I took a bunch of shots with, I've already tested the teleconvert, so I know it works great, it's fabulous. But I took this wide conversion lens and I tested it, took it into the redwoods, you know, where the light's kind of low and you got contrast to work with, all that sort of stuff. And then looked at the shots 100% in Capture One Pro, and they were wonderful. They were absolutely, and in fact, if I didn't know I had a conversion lens on there, it would probably not even enter my brain as I looked the picture. So I was very satisfied with the image quality. Of course, there are some trade-offs when you use these devices compared to, let's say, a very expensive prime lens, right? The very expensive prime lens, chances are very good that it's going to give you even better image quality than you get with these, you know, rigs that I'm talking about. However, when you weigh the whole thing, and especially when you're a nimble photographer and you're trying to balance out, let's say you build your pros and cons list, right? So you're trying to balance everything out. On the pros and cons list, you know, you get something that's very compact, right? It's matched to what you're doing. It's affordable compared to, let's say, a prime lens. You know, so it has all those things. It has a very high nimbulosity rating. And in certain situations, you might have some trade-off on image quality, but, you know, you would have to be really looking for top-drawer stuff. So if you just need very good image quality and you get all the other benefits, these are very nice, all right? And if you're, you know, in that exacting mode photographically, you're probably not going to be doing serious work with the X100V anyway, because you would want all these expensive interchangeable lenses, not just have that one lens on there. So this allows me to get more use out of the X100V. I have now officially canceled my bias against teleconverters and conversion lenses, with the caveat that they meet the things that I pointed out, that they're, you know, made by the manufacturer, that they're matched for the optics I'm putting them on, all those things. If they meet those criteria, then now I'm a thumbs up on them. And I'm really glad I got this latest one for the X100V. All right, I'm going to talk just a little bit about workshops. I got an update on the Oregon Coastal Workshop, which is in November. I scored our headquarters, and you are not going to believe this place. So we're up in Florence, Oregon. That's where our headquarters are. And the place for our headquarters themselves, which I rented, like an Airbnb, I think it's VRBO, it is fantastic. It has the vibe that you want for an Oregon Coast Workshop. It has the space that we need, you know, so we can really stretch out. But then it has like this great, you know, area in the back. It has this big patio where you can hang out. And then it goes down onto the sandy beach that goes out to the water. I mean, oh my gosh. I was looking like at place and then I go, no, and then another place. You know how when you're kind of looking for stuff like this, and then you find the one where all the, you know, the heavens open up and the angels start singing and everything. That was this, and I nabbed it. I booked it. So I have a fantastic, fantastic workshop headquarters for our Oregon Coast Workshop. Of course, the rest of the Oregon Coast is not bad either, you know, where we're actually going to be going to shoot. But when we get a really good headquarters like this, it brings it all together. So I just want to tell you about it because I'm so excited. I'm so excited about what we scored there. If you're interested in this workshop, we have 3 seats open for it. And this is a hard line that we draw on the number that can participate because we want to have a quality experience for those who are there. All you have to do is click on workshops on the digital story or go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops there. You can read about the Oregon Coast Workshop coming in November and get all the interesting details and reserve your spot right now. You only have to put down a deposit, not the whole fee. You can do that right now and make sure that you can join us on what is going to be a wonderful adventure. Speaking of adventures, I'm bringing back another installment of my favorite adventure. And this, of course, came out of the Humboldt Workshop where people were saying, we want to hear more about some of these things that you've done to get where you are now. The one that I'm going to talk about today was just crazy, and we just don't see this kind of stuff anymore. It was a helicopter flight over Hoover Dam that was sponsored by Panasonic. This is just one of those things where you go, I can't believe we're doing this. This was back when PMA was in Las Vegas and it was its own show, right? So we're going all the way back now in the time machine to 2008. And Panasonic had this camera, this compact camera that they were really proud of, good travel camera. It was the DMC TZ5. Boy, that's not easy to say. There's all C's and Z's and D's there. Anyway, they're really excited about this. And the TZ stands for travel zoom. And it really was a terrific on-the-go camera. Now, of course, these compact travel zooms, they've gone the way of the dinosaurs now. But at the time, this was a big deal. So it had a 10X Leica zoom on there that went from 28 to 280 millimeters. So, you know, you're going, wow, that's pretty cool. It had image stabilization built into it. And then you had different ratios you could choose from, 4:3, 3:2, 16:9. And it had HD movie capture, which at the time was a big deal, but check this out. The HD movie capture was 1280 by 720 at 30 frames per second. And they were proud of this. They were proud of this. The audio was recorded with an onboard mic. Okay, so there you go. But, you know, at least you could get audio. So what they wanted to do was really show off this little camera. And I'm sure they're thinking, what can we do? What can we do? So they decided for a small group of us, you know, media that report on these sort of things, that they would take us up in helicopters. We would fly over Hoover Dam, and then they'd take us to a landing spot that wasn't too far away, you know, where helicopters could land, and then we could get out and shoot some pictures, and then they'd put us back in the helicopter and then fly us back to, you know, the airfield. And we're so, you know, of course, if someone's saying, hey, do you want to you want to try out this compact camera and fly over Hoover Dam, you're going to go, all right, I think I'm down for that. One thing that we all learned that hadn't done much shooting in a helicopter, I hadn't done much shooting in a helicopter, is that it's tricky business shooting in a helicopter because, first of all, you have to photograph through glass that's often curved and it's got full of reflections, right? So unlike other through-the-glass shooting, you just can't put the front of the camera up against the surface because the rotor vibration is pretty intense. So I was thinking, ba 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 ba, right? So it'd be da 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 da. You'd just be banging the heck out of your camera. So you couldn't do that. So you had to kind of hold it just back a little bit from the glass so you didn't bang into the glass. And then really watch the reflections because, you know, the helicopter's changing positions all the time. And when you got in a position where there wasn't much reflections, then you would shoot, right? Shoot your shots. And this really helped if you were wearing like dark colors, like black or something like that. One of the things that they were showing off in this camera was the aerial scene mode. And they're saying, okay, we just want you to put it in this aerial scene mode. We're going to take you up in these helicopters, try not to bang the heck out of our cameras, and then, you know, get some good shots, right? So that's what we did. And so we're flying up there. I managed to actually get some pretty good images. And in fact, one of them was one of the title pages in my digital photography companion book. Actually was in one of my books and I was pretty happy with it. And I really, like I did all the stuff I learned I had to do. I watched the reflections and, you know, I kind of, you know, just sort of worked the whole thing. It turned out pretty cool. So then, of course, we landed and we got to take some other shots, which weren't nearly as exciting as we're flying up in the helicopter. And then we, you know, flew back. So they took us on this thing, this helicopter ride for a compact camera, a compact zoom camera in 2008. And, you know, I'm just, as we say this today, you're just going, that would never happen today. For all sorts of reasons. They're not going to spend that kind of money for a compact camera. We wouldn't even have that kind of compact camera. This is one of the things that I'm so fortunate about, that being in the business back in the early 2000s, 1999, 2000s, first part of 2000, the world was a lot different then in terms of how much money they would spend on media events and the kind of things that we got to do, the sort of equipment we got to shoot with, how we were treated, all that was like a whole different world. And it was just like the most fun time to be a technology reporter was, you know, the first part of 2000, from like 2000 to 2010. It was just like, this is great. And it wasn't just PMA. It was every event I went to, we were treated really well. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of activities that they sponsored for us, but I will never forget this helicopter ride over Hoover Dam with a compact point-and-shoot digital camera. Crazy stuff. So glad I got to do it. ProGrade Digital announces a $460, 512 gigabyte V90 UHS-II SDXC Cobalt Series memory card. You know, I just... 512 gigabyte SD card. That's what they're talking about here. The entire story is on DP Review. I have the link to it in the show notes. I'm just going to read you a little bit about it. It just blows my mind. You know, we're talking about how much things have changed in this podcast, right? Talking about the conversion lenses, teleconverters, talking about being in a helicopter flying over Hoover Dam with a point and shoot, right? And now we have 512 gigabyte UHS-II cards that we can put in our camera. ProGrade Digital has announced the 512 gigabyte version of its Cobalt UHS-II SDXC memory card, which offers maximum read and write speeds up to 300 megabytes per second and 250 megabytes per second, respectively. It offers a V90 performance, guaranteeing minimum write speeds never drop below 90 megabytes per second. An important specification for times when you're recording high bitrate video directly onto the card. The 512 gigabyte SD card is both X-ray proof and shock proof, and capable of operating between negative 25 C, which is negative 14 degrees F, and 85 C, which is 185 degrees Fahrenheit. It also features built-in error correction that detects and corrects data write and data transfer errors. You can pre-order it now for $460, which is basically 90 cents a gigabyte. And they also have the 256 gigabyte, 128 gigabyte, and 64 gigabyte models available. But those have been available for well over a year now. Oh, that's so yesterday, right? That's so 2021. As I said, this just blows my mind that we can get a little SD card, put in our camera, that is 512 gigabytes, and it writes at these speeds. My, oh my, have things changed. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Huge thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community month in and month out. And they have a new playground. I have set up on Derek Story Online a place for our Inner Circle members where they can interact directly. They can post pictures. Right now, we have a photo challenge going for May, a black and white photo challenge where they can post up to two pictures and get feedback from other Inner Circle members about their photos. We're going to be doing all sorts of stuff. They have direct chats on there. We can schedule Zoom meetings. It just opens up a whole new level of interaction among Inner Circle members. But one of the things that I really want to emphasize in this new Inner Circle area is the ability for people to share images and get feedback on their images from other photographers, This is a perk that doesn't cost anything more. It's still part of their Inner Circle membership. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, discounts on workshops, this new area for sharing pictures, for Q&A, for all that stuff, all the good stuff, and support this show and this community, then just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look at the site. If you're interested, sign up and join us because it's a lot of fun and it really helps keep this podcast ad-free. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper for sponsoring this show, longest-running sponsor of the Digital Story. They have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. You click on that tile, you can find just about any paper size or paper surface that you would ever want. You can find information for projects that you may be interested in doing, it, whether fine art cards, big prints, whatever they happen to be. You can get things that go along with your project, glassine sleeves, envelopes, ink, all that good stuff. All that is available, one-stop shopping for your inkjet printing needs. Just click on the tile for Red River Paper. Let them help you out. They have reviews of printers. If you're wondering, hey, should I get the Canon or the Epson? Go over there, take a look at what they're talking about. This is just a great spot. If you want to know what is the best paper for printing out color landscape, go to Red River Paper. They will help you figure out the best paper surfaces for just about any type of photography you may be doing. And they have a rockin' Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper, and a huge thanks to them for sponsoring this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed our podcast. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take pictures, be creative, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye bye now.